the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel. Back, yes, back with our weekly look at the world of Non-League Football. A little late to the party, I hear you cry. Well, it was only 2 months since we were last here, and there's been a million and one things to get done. Not least to make sure that we are back for another season with you as football gets back fully to some sort of normality. Well, we are back. I say we because, you know, it's the royal we. It's me and my sidekick who's busy. He's entertaining fans there. But I am pleased to say that Dave Anderson has joined me on the line because it's the first in the new series. We couldn't go without Dave. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Dave Anderson.
Thank you very much, Tim. I'm delighted to be here, and it feels like I've never been away. But no, as I said at the time, I thought it was better for me to step away because of my involvement at Barnet. And I think that's okay if you're the manager, but when you're, as the lads they say, when you kick balls at the goalkeeper for a living, I think it's wrong to be on and giving your opinions, you know. But I'm an avid listener, so don't worry about it.
And what's it like kicking balls at a goalkeeper? Do you have to go and pick the balls up if they miss, I guess? That's a question we'd all want to like to know.
Yeah, no, listen, in all seriousness, I've really, really enjoyed myself. I think I spoke to you at the end of the season. I'm not sure if it was on the show, but I remember speaking to you and saying I've really enjoyed myself with Simon Bassey. Bass ended up moving to Portsmouth with Danny and Nick. And I thought that was that. And then the chairman sort of pulled me and says, look, I'd like you to stick around. Dean came in, who is no stranger to me or you. And Harry Keogh came in as first team coach, and which that intrigued you, you know, someone who's a 1%er really doing what he's done in his football career. So I've stayed, and I have to be honest, I absolutely love it because I'm way down the pecking order, so there isn't a lot of stress for me as long as my sessions are good and the keepers are happy and playing well.
Well, you used to tell us week in, week out about how the best role in the world was being assistant manager because you got all the praise and all the glory when it went well, but if it went wrong, it wasn't your fault. I mean, as a goalkeeping coach, I mean, where do you lie there?
Well, listen, I make the tea for the assistant. That's where that is, you know, which I'm fine with. You know, how many sugars? But no, it's been great. It's a magnificent setup, Barnet. You know, it's intriguing, and it's I could write a book about it, and I might one day.
There seems to be a trend of making documentaries about football clubs. We need one. We need one about Barnet. I'll send you with a camera. No, maybe not.
Yeah, do that. It'd be a great series. But no, look, I think that, you know, I'm never.
Now, elsewhere in this episode, I talk about conspiracy theories, and here begins another one, because at that point, the production desk suddenly decided to stop recording and go a little haywire. Not that Mr. Anderson had said anything controversial. This is the new Dave Anderson, the man that kicks balls at goalkeepers, not at football officials or authorities. Bizarre, but unfortunately, his words of wisdom about enjoying being a goalkeeping coach and the crack of the dressing room and his desire never to again become a manager are, it seems, lost forever. What I do know is even technology blips won't keep Dave quiet. So whilst he's not a permanent fixture here, he will be back from time to time as the season progresses to give us some thoughts from the other side of the training ground fence. So great to hear from him, and we will be hearing from him more very soon. Perhaps the desk was worn out on its first outing of the season. You know, like the star midfielder who's looking for the gaffer to make a change on the hour mark in that first game back. Because we do have quite a bumper show. We have a manager with a 100% record and his side averaging 4 goals per game from the first 3 outings. We have a man who's founded a club during COVID times and looking to climb up the Welsh pyramid with a slightly different approach, which I think lots of non-league clubs could and should take notice of. We also have an old friend of the show with his new book and indeed a new phone to talk to us on. And we have the non-league paper roundup with, to be fair, not too much news to round up so early on in the season. So there is plenty to get your ears back into gear listening to. So let's get matters underway. So let's get to our first guest of the new season. New season of the show. And as we settle back into our season, I'm keeping it local, very local for me, heart-wise anyway. Away from the show and many other juggles in my life, there's a club in Middlesex, just a few miles from Heathrow Airport, that takes up much of my time. We've had highs, we've had lows during my time. When I first stepped up, helping behind the scenes, February 1998. Right now, we're on one of those highs. Promotion challenges in the past two abortive seasons, as well as creditable performances on TV in the past two FA Cup first rounds. And this season, Hayes and Yedding United have set down the marker in the Southern Premier South with three wins from three and scoring 12 goals in the process. It's not favouritism. I just couldn't ignore the impressive start made by my own club. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show manager at Hayes and Yedding United, Mr. Paul Hughes.
Hi, Tim. Hey, thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to get you on. I get lobbied by Hayes and Yedding fans constantly to get you back on, and I'm no doubt I'll be lobbied by plenty of other listeners on the show to say, well, why have you got your own manager on? Well, yeah, a great start, and we all know that three games does not make a season, but after so long without competitive football, how nice is it to start off that well?
Yeah, I think for us it's great because we're quite notoriously slow starters, to be fair. So I think for us to get off to that start is great. But I think it's largely part, you know, in due to the fact that we've kept the players from last season. So we've got a lot of consistency, and I think that always helps at non-league level to have that consistency in your lineup. So I think that has helped with the start we've had. But no, you know, long may it continue because, you know what football's like. You know, we could lose the next three and it would be a different story, wouldn't it? So, but no, the performances have been good. So that's the most important thing, is that we're performing well.
Yeah, you mentioned keeping that squad together. With lockdown so long and so loathsome as well for everybody that just wanted some football to be played, many clubs have ended up with a whole new set of squad, a whole new set of management and that sort of thing. That consistency is what we talk about later on in the season. But at the start of the season, when everybody's, you know, lives have been so complicated for 18 months, it's just nice to know who you're going in that dressing room with.
Yeah, I think, we know what characters we've got, which is, as important as the ability. Obviously, we know what they can do football-wise. We've added one or two where we feel we need a strengthening. And I think that those lads have produced so far and have shown us the right attitude. So, all in all, it's a happy ship. But you know what non-league's like, you know, chuck a bit of politics, chuck a bit of drama, chuck a bit of, you know, dressing room unrest, chuck a bit of, you know, players going out of form. There's a lot of twists and turns and injuries and suspensions. There's a lot of twists and turns to go this year. So if we can manage all of that, then hopefully we'll be all right.
Yeah, I mentioned the goals. A forward line that certainly has the fans very excited, but great support around them too, with goals being shared around. It's not just one marksman that's racking them all up. As an opposition manager looking on, that's got to be something hard to combat.
Yeah, no, good point. I think that there's a lot of focus on Moses, obviously, because, with his track record. But you're right, it's not him scoring. It's all the others that are scoring as well. So I think going forward, we're certainly a difficult proposition because, you know, you might be able to say you shackle one of them. There's three or four others that can do and score goals as well. So, yeah, at the moment, it looks good in that department. So, yeah, like I said, long may that continue.
Yeah, and you're not the only club with a 100% record. Even at the same level, Peterborough Sports, Hednesford Town, notably, they've also 3-3 in the Southern Premier Central. But you've got over double their number of goals. That certainly is the thing that's going to be grabbing everybody's attention.
Yeah, I think. Well, as you know, you've been with us long enough, or sort of witnessed the teams that we're putting together. I think we've always been a goal scoring. That's how we set up. We want to score goals. I think if you've got a team that struggles to score, for me, you're always bottom six or certainly bottom half of the table. So we always focus on how can we score. And I think that we've got a lot of options this year, a lot of players that are comfortable in front of goal, which is handy because you go into every game knowing that you've got a chance of winning because there are so many different ways that we can score our goals. So at the moment, like I said, we're very, very happy with that. And like I said, the fact we scored double the goals as everyone else just goes to show that group of players really have, hit the ground running in that department.
Yeah, and you mentioned the bonding in the dressing room. One other factor pricking up people's ears is the fact that in two of those games, you've come from behind. Now, resilience is a word that we've probably overused in the last 18 months, but it's clearly a factor in that opening success you've had.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, if you want to get a draw, win against, or get a point against, just don't score. that would be the advice. No. All joking aside, no, look, I just think we started a little bit slow. I don't know why. It seems like when the opposition score, we just take the shackles off and we just play our game. So I'm not happy with that because I feel we should have that attitude from the start. But when the opposition do get a goal, you know, we've got nothing to lose. We have to score. So we need that approach from the very first minute. And if we do that, then yeah, God, you know, we are going to be tough to beat. But, you know, look, we're at this level for a reason. You know, we need that consistency, we need that mentality, and we've just got to work hard to ingrain that in the players. But we do need to start the games better than we have been.
Yeah, it's certainly worth turning up for some entertainment, Valley, because there are some goals at the other end as well. Now, I mentioned in the opener that the back-to-back first round FA Cup appearances on TV. In a competitive season, they're additional bonuses, aren't they? Yeah, they help with additional income into the clubs, but they also put the club on the map. You know, does that help you in turn with recruitment, even with relationships with pro clubs who suddenly know who you are?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's, you know, when you're out in the public eye in that degree, like we were in two FA Cup runs, people do take notice of you. And we performed well. So then they're going, okay, well, this team try and play and do things the right way. So you do develop a relationship. And obviously, you know, we developed quite a nice relationship with Oxford United after the exploits there. And other clubs are obviously taking note of what we're doing. And there's a lot of interest in some of the young players we've got. So those bridges are being built, which is great for the club. And you're right, those cup runs give us that platform, as well as the financial gains of going far in the cup, which are essential to us and any non-league club. It's the putting the club back on the map and people wanting to build relationships with you and wanting to be involved with what you're doing. That's so important as well.
And off the field, it's still much to be completed, and you'll keep nagging me day after day on that front because that sort of stuff's on my desk at the club. But yeah, much potential is a phrase I still use. But the club does have an impressive stand, excellent pitch, growing facilities. We're probably preaching to the converted with the audience of this show, but non-league isn't all spit and sawdust clubhouses and pothole playing surfaces anymore, is it?
No, it's not. It's there's some excellent facilities. If you look around our league, the pitches are vastly improved. And we travelled to Yate Town last week, didn't we? We were all quite impressed with their setup now. Because I think football's changed as well. A lot of teams do get it down and play, so the surfaces have to be better. You know, coaches are getting their qualifications and everyone's trying to play the right way. So the facilities on the pitch have to improve, and I think they have done. And obviously, you know, we make money on the other side of things, don't we? If the facilities are right and we're selling coffees and food and hospitality is right, then obviously that's a revenue stream for the club as well. So I think people are just putting good business plans together and getting their commercials right, and that's allowing clubs to thrive at our level. So yeah, long may it continue. And yeah, you know, you've got a lot on your plate. So I'm not going to put anything more your way because I know you're a one man band at the moment. So but yeah, we've got all that to look at, and I know you know that, and I know we know that. So we need to focus on that.
I probably need a few plates to put some more stuff on, but you mentioned there about the non-league changing, and you say about managers wanting to play a different way, getting their qualifications. You played at the highest level of the domestic game with Chelsea in a fantastic side. You learned from some legendary players and managers. Are you an amalgam of all of them, or have there been others that maybe have influenced you to become the current manager you are?
I think I was massively influenced, obviously, because I went through the academy at Chelsea, and that was my club up to 24. So massively influenced by my experiences there, and then obviously the players and the managers that we played under. So I would say a lot of the way we try and do things has been influenced by that. But you know, I had a really good time under Joe Kinnear at Luton Town as well, and that was a very different approach to the game, but still as valuable. I mean, the camaraderie that we produced at Luton was immense. The play wasn't as quite as fluid and as flowing as Chelsea, but it was hard. It was it was win every battle. We went into every game thinking that we'd outrun, outwork, and beat teams up. You know, that was our approach at Luton Town, on top of the fact that we had some talented players as well. So, you know, there's probably an amalgam of that, because we're certainly at non-league level. You know, we haven't got access to all those fantastic players. We can play like Barcelona. You know, we have to be able to mix it up as well. And I think that our group at the moment has no problem mixing out, but also has the, in our opinion, the right way of playing the game. You know, moving it quick, getting lots of passes in, so we can create those opportunities where we can actually, you know, put a ball in with a bit of quality rather than just hopefully drift one in. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's an amalgam of all those experiences that we've had. And obviously I'm doing it with Richie as well, and Richie's been through that system with me. And that's why I think we're very aligned in the way we want to play the game.
Yeah, and you know, Dave Anson's always the one that talks so highly of the importance of the role of the assistant manager, that there's someone that can tell you when you're going wrong, but also put his arm around you when you need it.
Yeah, and also someone you trust. I mean, trust not only in terms of personality, in terms of him as a human being, but trust him. You know, if there's something he feels that we need to do, you know, I trust him with that on the training ground. You know, as long as, you know, we talk it through with me, and we'll think about it. And say, you know what, Richie, actually, I hadn't thought about that. That's a good idea. So someone that you can trust there, that can throw things at you that you may not have thought of. Or, you know, sometimes as a manager, you can't see the wood from the tree sometimes. So sometimes you have another perspective, another educated perspective is hugely important in football, because, there's a lot at stake, isn't there? And a lot of pressure there. And by, you know, you just want other people to see things and give you other opinions and other views on the way you're approaching things. And I think Richie's great in that regards.
Yeah. And I if anybody's got any doubts as to, you know, yourself, someone that's played in the Premier League, now as a non-league manager. The non-league manager, it's a thankless task. Yourself and Richie yesterday sat on the bench trying to organise an under-18 side in somewhat farcical, I suppose, circumstances in the end.
Well, I mean, Andrea, obviously, is the under-18 manager, but he's been called back to Italy because he's had some family issues to sort out. So, you know, we're left with a team to sort out. We had 11 players yesterday, and no subs, and we had a reserve goalkeeper that played centre forward for us. So, and we still won. We won 2-1. So it was an incredible game, actually. But yeah, you know, we're there taking the under-18s. But you know, we have got a vested interest as well there, Tim, because we've got probably five or six players there that we feel can progress into our first team. It's a good group. So we want to keep tabs on them at the same time. So yeah, we were taking that game yesterday. But yeah, you're right. It is a bit of a thankless job a lot of the time. But I mean, I'm sure all the managers who listen to this would understand that we don't get thanked for much, but we get moaned at a lot if things don't go right.
There's going to be managers up and down the country that are going to get plenty of abuse from the sidelines on Saturday. But, you know, who knows their backstory and what they've actually put in for the club during the week.
Exactly.
Now, I mentioned three games does not make a season, but it's Bank Holiday weekend. Two games in quick succession. Taunton Town visitors this Saturday, always a tough opposition. Then Beaconsfield Town, who've had a decent start themselves. After 18 months without competitive football, is it these games in such close proximity that's going to be a real test of players' fitness?
100%. But again, I think the mentality from our point of view is, you know, they've got exactly the same issues to deal with as we have. You know, we came back into pre-season 3 weeks earlier than everyone else, so I think that may have helped us with our fitness level, so we feel reasonably fit. But yeah, this is a big test this weekend. Wouldn't surprise me if there'll be quite a few little niggly injuries over this little period, because, you know, they are two games in very close succession. They will be competed. The intensity of the game will be high. So let's all touch wood that we can get through those games unhindered. But I'm pretty sure that there will be quite a lot of little niggles over this weekend that clubs, managers will have to end up managing somehow. But yeah, you're right, it's a huge test this weekend.
And there's another headache for another set of managers up and down the country. Paul, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Obviously, I'll be keeping tabs on your progress, and I'll be singing your praises when we need to. Thanks again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Cheers, Tim. See you soon. Bye.
Now, the best thing about this job is the many people you get to speak to from all walks of life, from all ends of the British Isles, and indeed further afield as well. So I thought, open a new season after the past couple of years we've all endured. This was probably the perfect story to bring to you. Whilst their neighbours have been gaining international publicity due to millionaire buyers and a soon-to-air documentary, our next club have been busy going about their business somewhat undiscovered. That's not for the want of trying, though. I've had plenty of messages from our next guest and his cohorts alongside him. But we celebrate real football on this show. So the fifth tier of the Welsh football system, and in a new league that isn't anything unusual for us to talk about. So if we can't promote the great work of what this club are doing, what good are we? So it's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show, founder of FC United of Wrexham, Andrew Rusko.
Thanks, Tim. Thank you for inviting me and to talk about FC United of Wrexham. Thank you.
Now, I don't want to encourage everybody to send me as many mails and messages that you guys have, but if you do it persistently, you do it nicely, there are always rewards for you, for everybody. Now, I can hear already that, you know, maybe listeners to our show that haven't heard of FC United of Wrexham before, they're going to say, oh, it's just another bunch of disgruntled fans looking to take control of the ball. Tell me different.
It's totally not that at all. We actually support the Ryan and Rob takeover. What FC United of Wrexham is, it was something that I had on my mind since 2016, and when I was at Brickfield Rangers, and we initially actually have started off when I've had the opportunity to create the club as a futsal outfit. Because obviously we've called ourselves FC United of Wrexham, I think it's gathered quite a bit of support in the community, and it's grown into a football club so quickly since we started. It's a year old next month. So we're actually not against the takeover. We support the takeover. But we just want to be that club in the Welsh system that's got the Wrexham name, if we're being honest with you. You know, the over the years, we've seen teams in the old Welsh Premier League, like Inter Cardiff, and we've got currently Cardiff Met in the Cymru Premier. And I've always thought, well, I wonder if we had another Wrexham side in the Welsh League and see how far we could take it, and, you know, would it gather the support and the momentum like other teams have from other areas. Again, like I said, Inter Cardiff was probably a good example. Cardiff Met as we speak, and it has gathered a lot of support in such a short space of time. So that's what FC United of Wrexham is, really. We started off as a futsal outfit, and we've just seemed to have grown into a football outfit. And it's just thanks to the volunteers like Tom Winsper, Morgan Churchill, Malcolm Wareham. Without their support, it wouldn't be where we are right at this minute in time.
So, effectively, whilst others were struggling to keep their clubs alive during the pandemic, you've just started a new one. Did you think about this logically, or...
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm a very I don't know if it comes across, but I'm a very emotional person and I'm a passionate person, and I thought the pandemic was a fantastic time actually to develop a club. It gave us an opportunity to get the administration side of it prepared, preparation all in hand, from our visions, what we want to get to, the points, what we want to develop, the philosophy. And it was, we didn't have any outgoings at the time as well, which was quite interesting. Yeah. Because again, that was the beauty of starting a club in the pandemic, is because we were only starting off, we could only just gain it through sponsorship and so on, to get the kits in, to get the fees ready for going into the leagues as such. And yeah, it just worked brilliantly, if I was being honest with you. The first pandemic was probably a blessing in that aspect. The second one hit us a little bit harder, but not as hard as you would think. So it was a great time, in my opinion.
And it's interesting because last season, yeah, the abortive seasons, we've been speaking about, you know, how non-league could turn it that turn the situation on its head and benefit from it. And we've constantly been saying, you know, let's take some of this time and think about where we want to go. Think more strategically. And clearly, maybe you were listening to me. Maybe you took it on board. But it does seem, even talking to other clubs up and down the country and that clubs actually seem to be in a better place than we were probably 2 years ago.
I agree. I totally agree with that, in all fairness. And I think it's how you always view the pandemic. And I've seen the pandemic as a window of opportunity. And I think a lot of clubs have seen it that way and, you know, found different strands and ways of how to generate income and income that can become more sustainable in comparison to what's gone on previously. So no, I totally agree with your point there, Tim.
Yeah. And what I also love about, which you've already touched on there, is your focus that this club is going to be community driven. And I'm not just talking about building a new little community. You've already touched on it about, you know, AFC Wrexham and your passion for that there. But it's about making a club that's integral to the existing community. And again, coming off the back of the pandemic, that clubs like yours can help bring back that socialisation, can help bring back, you know, where people have had times where they've been on their own or maybe needed a new focus. And for me, non-league has got its, as you say, the biggest window of opportunity ever to take that step and take the driving seat in that respect.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, as you know, when we've developed FC United of Wrexham, again, as much as I had it in my mind from 2016 and something that I was, because a bit of my background, I've worked for Wrexham FC East Football in the community, and I've worked for Chester FC as well, which that didn't go down too well between Wrexham and Chester, but I've both worked in the community departments, and it was something that I trained in through university. And you look at some of the great clubs that have been built up over the years, like your Celtics and Rangers, they've all been developed because of a purpose and a reasoning. And for me, we wanted to develop a club that was united, that had, you know, it had aims and an ethos and a philosophy behind it, an ideology. And one of the things we want to do is support people who've got mental health issues. We're currently supporting a few within the club, hence why we want to be a community club. And also we're supporting people to have transferable employability skills, which has probably been one of the biggest things that has happened due to the pandemic. So if we can get people qualified on coaching qualifications, and it's not about just trying to get them, you know, qualified on coaching qualifications, it's about empowering them to learn the life skills from the coaching qualifications. You know, as a club, we've helped play people, you know, people with who volunteers within our organization get into university, and two of them have just passed their first years of university at Glyndŵr University. And the University of South Wales, they've just passed. And that's because of the support that we've put in through FC United of Wrexham. You know, we do CVs for people who want things. We put in references in. So, again, as much as we want to focus on the playing aspect, we're trying to develop the life skills element. And if you do this as a club, you get a bigger need for the club to be needed in the community. And people will want to support you as well then, because they know that you're just not going out there just to focus on, you know, result driven. Yeah, we want to be at the playing at the best level we want to be within our 20-year plan. But at this moment in time, it's all about, you know, establishing ourselves, making ourselves, you know, known to everyone. We've got again, another reason why we went with a name like FC United of Wrexham. We want recognition nationally as well, because I talk about the futsal being the main element, and with futsal, you're already on a national scale, because the team, you know, if you want to go and play, it's not like, for example, football, you've got a pocket of grassroots teams and so on, and amateur teams within one area of a town. With futsal, if you want to go and get competition, you've got to go play Bolton futsal. You've got to go and play Manchester futsal or Liverpool futsal. And that name is giving us that national recognition as well. So again, everything comes into it. And what we want to do, though, is be pioneers and in our community. to support people who are going through barriers to employability, sport, and general life issues that they come across.
And I'll come back to the footstools in a minute, because I think that's another key point. But you know, for years I've been going on about the need for non-league to become run more as a business, and I don't mean that we're paying multi millions of pounds out to players and agents that have crept into almost every level of non-league football. It's that working as a business, and it's giving people basic life skills as well as running financially rather than just relying on one person and things like that. We need to, I guess, smarten up in a way at non-league level. I think that's the thing, particularly if clubs are going to survive for another 100 years and things like that. And I love that. That's one of the things that attracted me to follow your story, is that I can see that ethos in you, that at the end of the day, we just want to make people better, both on the field and off the field.
Of course, you know, not everyone's going to be playing football day in, day out, but they might want to work within the trade, and that's the life skills we can gain. And I understand, you know, from our point of view, we're always probably going to be amateur for a very long time. I'd love to get into semi-professional realms in years to come. But if we're going to get to the semi-professional realms, we need to basically create jobs, and that comes through sustainable models. And I don't know how much you know about the Welsh system, Welsh FA. A few years ago, the Welsh FA supported the top flight clubs with 4G pitches. And then 4G pitches have been a lifeline to other clubs like TNS, Bala, Airbus, who obviously they're in Tier 2 at this moment in time. And they've been a source of income to actually provide football through their academy systems back to the community. And again, I think I understand there's regulations in England, and it does create jobs from a sustainable point of view, but maybe League Two should be allowed to have 4G pitches for grounds and stuff like that as well. UEFA allow these grounds themselves, so why not in the English game, and then leave the club to have the choice whether it's a 4G or not. Mm. I understand the science, there's possibilities that it may increase cancer rates and stuff like that, but again, that's not being 100% proven. But whilst we've got an opportunity there to I look at Macclesfield, for example. They've gone with what they've done, and that 4G is used every night. It looks perfect, but it's created a sustainable model for that club. You know, so if that owner, the chairman, I know Robbie's doing a good work there, but if the chairman who's pumping the money in left, that model could sustain itself. And that means that first team is going to get better and better and better through, you know, quality and actually paying the wages of the players that you need to get up to the top levels for your youth academy and stuff to be paid for. So, no, I think 4Gs do help that, but it's just getting your hands on them, I suppose. Yeah. And then in England, the regulations to allow that, and maybe they should at League Two and League One level allow it.
Yeah, over the years, non-league's led the way in sort of new innovations that have then been picked up elsewhere. Yeah, and let's go back to the futsal thing. We've mentioned futsal on here. We've spoken to futsal players, we've spoken to futsal managers over the years. And with non-league managers, you know, wanting ever more skillful players, particularly, you know, we're getting better pitches than we used to have, you know, particularly with the 3G pitches and that. You know, managers are looking for more skillful players. And I've just been surprised it has been overlooked. Futsal's been overlooked at non-league level as a focus. That it, you know, here is a skills base and a set of players that can pass, you know, pinpoint accuracy and turn on a sixpence. You know, have a look at them. But where it's, and that's part of your philosophy, that you're almost starting with that as at the heart of your football club, and then building a football club from there.
That's it. Okay, we've got a football club as it stands, and we're encouraging our players to play futsal for ourselves, because our adult futsal side plays in the top division of the FAW Futsal Elite League. So if you win that, you go into the UEFA Futsal Champions League and so on. Now, I fell in love with futsal probably about 7 or 8 years ago when I first got involved, and it led me to actually play the original futsal ruling of rules, because there's a FIFA and there's an AMF version, where the AMF version, basically a little rundown, is they take throw-ins and the FIFA one doesn't. They do kick-ins, which I do support that more than the AMF in it such. But I've actually coached and played for Great Britain in that version as a goalkeeper. I got a clean sheet against Italy for 3 minute, like 3 minute cameo, but I'm taking that.
Anyway, that's what the record books say.
Yeah, it'll always state that I've done that. But anyway, but that's that. But futsal, I love the game so much because it brings out so much, even from a life skill point of view. Because it's a 4v4 in the middle of the court. Okay, so it's 5v5, but it's 4v4 in the middle of the court. Okay, you are accountable if you mess up with your unit. So again, if you've missed the ball in the top pivot, you're accountable to get back to support the unit, because the transition's so quick. You could be losing a goal just from you losing it in a, if we put it to football terms, in a cam position. Okay, now again, the game creates a lot more 1v1, so you've got to be highly skilled. But people do take that as a bit of a myth. They think, oh, you got to be skillful and everything to play futsal, and it's not. It's a lot more passing and moving that goes on in the game, a lot more rotations and so on. And I've actually, from a player development, and I know a lot of futsal purists don't like this because they want futsal for futsal, and I am a bit of a futsal purist that way, but it is beneficial to football. And basically, the amount of players since I've got an under 11s right now, and I've had them since under 5s, and I would, out of that group, out of 12 players, 10 of them have gone on to either English football academies, they've gone on to Welsh academy sides, or reasonably termed academy development centres, like a one in Oswestry Street, Dragons Academy, and the parents say it's the futsal that's brought them through. Now, again, to put the point home about futsal, Uruguay is where futsal's originated from. And I'm talking it now from a very Welsh opinion point of it. And this is from my own research of it. Uruguay's got the same population as Wales. Uruguay is in the top 10 every year. Wales isn't as such. Now, one of the things I looked at was, well, what's going on in Uruguay? What is different in South America? Well, futsal is one of the biggest key ingredients to their player development. Now, if I've seen it from my own research of the players that have gone on, and it's going on there, I think it clarifies your point, is why isn't it not being introduced more so in the non-league areas? And you know, in England, Wales, wherever it's gone, if we truly want to get ourselves, you know, up there in the ranks and get more players through the system, and I think futsal is. But then we've got to accept that, you know, Manchester United in their younger groups, they do a lot more futsal. Everton do support it. Chelsea support it. And it is becoming more and more, but a lot of people are not taking the knowledge and the research that the game does bring to player development. And again, I remember when I went to Kevin Druids and I was playing a goalkeeper, and back then I think it was Hugh Griffiths wanted us to play out from the back more. But I was brought up in a system where you just constantly go route one, get rid. And I went to play with Wrexham Futsal, and it supported my foot skills and understanding that more so from a goalkeeper's point of view. So, because a lot of people do say is, oh, well, you can't take futsal into football. It's nonsense. It is purely nonsense. And I think it needs to be more, you know, adopted and embedded into our culture in all walks of Great Britain football.
Yeah, well, it certainly sounds like, you know, you've done the research and you've seen it firsthand as well. And I just think when we're talking about non-league clubs that have got limited, in certain circumstances, limited training facilities as well, you can pinpoint the basics very easily. And you know, and again, when you're in close proximity to another set of lads like that, the camaraderie's got to be stronger as well, rather than two sets of lads on a large pitch just doing their own little training regime. Anyway, I've got you on as well. Futsal is it's an intriguing part of the non-league. I just think that someone needs to maybe grasp hold of it. But it's also about starting a club. It's early days for your new club. And I just wanted to ask, you know, what have you learned that you wished you hadn't? And what have you learned that you've never thought you would, having started a football club?
That is probably a good question, that is, in all fairness. So what have I learned, which I wish I never learned, is I think it's a tough one for me, because I've gone into this open-minded and wide-eyed anyway, because I've already done club development with like Brickfield Rangers. I was heavily involved in attracting three big sponsors to that club that turned them semi-professional three times, and they're now again still a semi-professional outfit now in the tier three system of Welsh football. So I quite understand what, you know, what really was expected to develop. I think the hardest part, it would probably be a better answer to it, is trying to empower volunteers to have the same standards and approach that you have to basically make a club work more effectively. But again, everyone's at a level of learning as well themselves. And, you know, like Tom's 27, he's learning. He's just come from a referee background. Malcolm's 30, he's gone straight into a managerial role. We've got a sporting director, Aston Jones, who's done club development before, again, so he's got some good expertise. But again, it's just trying to get him to be that little bit more professional. And that's no disrespect to them, because they're open-minded and they know this and they want to learn and get better. But what was the other question again? Sorry, Tim. So to give you the other answer.
What have you learned that you never would have learned without starting that football club? Which I suppose could well be that same answer, really, because it's interesting, because it's something that we're hoping to cover next week about volunteers, and that's a big thing across, you know, with my club, but across football, across sport, is that on the back of the pandemic, the voluntary sector is so much more different. You know, we hear about in the paid world the shortage of people, you know, whether that's lorry drivers or whether that's people that want to do the jobs that they maybe deem too menial for them, and then we're expecting people to do lots of things for nothing when they may be struggling elsewhere. And it's a big thing that it's something that I'm certainly going to be lobbying the FA on, is that we need greater support from both the Welsh FA and the English FA in how we build that volunteer base and how we educate them, but also keep them happy.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's probably that is the key point that I would bring up to yourself, is empowering volunteers to get, you know, to even get up on a Saturday or Sunday morning or take time out of their life in the week just to coach children, to coach adults. That's been the hardest part. And you're dealing with a lot of personalities, and, you know, you will clash with people, but then there'll be people who will clash with you. There'll be people who clash between themselves. But what you've got to do as a chairman, as the head of the table, is respect and appreciate that they're all there for you. You know, they're there for you, for the club. They're there because they believe in what you're trying to develop as well. And sometimes you've got to, you can't go in with an ego. That's my opinion. And the amount of times I see a lot of people going with egos, and don't get me wrong, some get successes, but that's probably when they're up the ladder a little bit more, like in certain clubs, like Welsh Premier League teams and clubs like you, maybe in the English Premier League, you can have them egos to an extent. But when you're down at the bottom, at the end of the scale, you can't. You've got to really empower and appreciate and respect and support and be supportive. And again, this is our own ethos and philosophy anyway, but you've got to really do it twice as much and better. I would probably say it's harder to run a team at the bottom end, if you're trying to do it correctly, than it is at the top end. Because the top end, I worked as a general manager for Preston Town just recently, and we got our tier two license. And you know what? The fans and the volunteers, they came from everywhere to support. They weren't in droves, but they were there. Trying to get that at the bottom end of the scale is twice as hard. And you know what? If you can make it work at the bottom, you can make it work at the top. But that for me is a bigger challenge, and that's why. You know, Prestatyn wanted me back recently, but obviously I've turned it down. But because this is a bigger and more challenging project for me. But if you can get it working at the bottom, I guarantee you can make it work at the top.
Well, again, that's almost a mantra of this show, that the top level of football could learn so much from us guys at non-league. Now, you mentioned a 20-year plan. How far can FC United of Wrexham go?
Well, how far we go is to where how far we want to go is probably two different things. But our 20-year plan is, we're not going to say we want to be in the Cymru Premier in Tier 1. We want to be in Tier 2. That would be the place where we want to end up in the 20 years. At this moment in time, it's about establishing ourselves, building up volunteers, building up players, building up the youth section. So that means they, you know, once they're ready to play, they can meet the players that we've currently got, which makes a sustainable model from a humanistic point of view. But we've got things that we've got to get ourselves our own ground, because at the moment we're here, there and everywhere. But, you know, we're in talks with people about maybe having our own ground somewhere. I can't mention that just yet, because that meeting's tonight, actually. So touch wood. And basically, we know that if we want to progress and go and win leagues, we've got to make sure our first step would be having a ground with barriers. And that would take us to Tier 4 if we win the league. The year, you know, again, if we want to win Tier 4, we've got to go and get a ground with 80 seats to get to Tier 3. And then there'll be other criteria, a bit like the Rugby Super League is, you've got other criteria that come into it. And then to get into the tier two system, you've got to have a seat, you know, a stand of like 280 seats, and, you know, tannoy system, light emergency lighting, the whole aspects. And that is the dream for us. And hopefully that we can get there, because, you know, FC United of Wrexham as a name, it is a big name to go out with already, but it's a, you know, it's attractive, I think, in my opinion. Maybe I'm just being biased there, but it does seem attractive as a name. And that's where we want to be in our 20-year plan, is in Tier 2, you know, bringing through young players, you know, giving them opportunities for the top-level clubs to see them, and, you know, a flowing youth system, and having our own ground and clubhouse. And that's what we want. And then a club that we can leave a legacy for our children.
Well, Andrew Ruskin, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and your dreams, but also telling us about FC United Wrexham. It is a name, as you say, it's got a lot to live up to, but it certainly sounds like you've got various plans in place and the right philosophies as well. So we look forward to following your journey. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Now, starting late this season, I kind of feel I've neglected the hard work done by one of the stalwarts of the show. And I don't mean Dave Anson's Peroni supplier. I mean FA Cup backpile. With two rounds and a very expansive rounds at that, they're already completed. There's so much to catch up on. But even more, he's written a book, 150 Years of the FA Cup this year, and your early Christmas present has already been chosen for you. To tell us more, let's welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. He's legend of the airwaves. He's a celebrated statistician and now he's a best-selling author. It's FA Cup fact file. Mr. Phil Annetts, welcome back, Phil.
Hello, Tim. It's very good to be back. Good to talk to you again.
It's good to talk to you. Now, let's start with the book. What's it called? What's in it?
Okay, well, it's called FA Cup 150, and it's a celebration and a commemoration of the 150th anniversary of the FA Cup. And there's a heck of a lot in it. It's facts, stats, and top 150 lists covering the whole of the competition since it started in 1871. And there's nuggets there whether you support a top level team or whether you follow a team down in the lower regions, or even if you just love football per se, there's going to be something probably on every page that will amaze you and surprise you, and maybe even get you quoting to your friends what you found out.
Yeah, I wanted to hear your elevator pitch. I'm joking, because I've got my my own copy. I'm lucky enough to hold a copy in my hands. I look at it. You've got a front quote from Henry Winter, and on the back page is a picture of you on Football Focus. I mean, that's pretty heady stuff for any book, let alone a stats book.
No, I was very pleased that Henry would very kindly put his name to the book and to provide me with a bespoke quote about the book, and also have support from BBC's John Murray and Steve Wilson, who also have provided specific quotes. So it is nice to know that people in the game are supporting what I do and are happy to be associated with it.
Yeah, and you've been getting some great reviews of it too, which are well-deserved, including Groundtastic, which all good non-leaguers will know is the Bible for us grassroots fans.
Yeah, that was an amazing review. It's almost as if I'd written it myself. I was so very happy to read what they'd put. In particular, they focused on the fact that it was a book, even as a book of stats, it's a book that you can read from the start to the finish as much as you can, just dip in and dip out of it. And that was the intention, was to have a book that had that capability to hopefully enthrall you as soon as you start reading, but also to encourage you to keep coming back going, oh yeah, I've never seen something like that. Go and have a look again.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want it to sound rude, but it's the sort of thing I used to refer to as a toilet book, because it was, yeah, you know, it was one of those things that you, as you say, you could pick up at any point and you learn something while you were busy elsewhere. But there's plenty to learn in it, and I'm lucky enough as well to get a mention in there, and the show too, which is all very humbling. But way back when you started that blog about the FA Cup, when we used to call you up for some help, did you ever think it would lead to this?
I had hoped I could get to a position whereby I had a book out by the time the 150th anniversary came about, but I have to say, right at the beginning, it seemed like a far-fetched dream. So it's been a wonderful journey over the last 5 years, and thanks for the support from yourselves on the Non-League Show. That's really helped raise the profile. And I have to say as well, I mean, it's that bad as it sounds, but COVID came at the right time, because being housebound meant I didn't have any distractions, and I had nothing but to focus on getting this book ready for the start of this season. So every cloud, they say, has a little bit of a silver lining.
I never claimed to be the greatest non-league statter. I mean, in non-league, that's a very dangerous thing to try and aim for. But I like to think I know my stuff. But every time I pick it up, I learn something new, which is, you know, perfect for this sort of book, or for any book, really. I love the fact, you know, I was lucky enough to see some proofs and sort of help you go through various bits, that I learned about the original concept of the FA Challenge Cup. Now, growing up, I was a Spurs fan, and we were the winners of more FA Challenge Cups than anybody else at the time. FA Challenge Cup, it never twigged with me that actually it was a winner-stays-on competition back then when it first started.
Yeah, that was the original intention, indeed. The holders were to be challenged by the team that won through all the qualifying, all the knockout stages. And that happened for just one season. And they realised it wasn't really a tenable solution, and quickly reverted to a straight knockout. But the name has stayed, and it's still officially called the FA Challenge Cup.
And probably all the much better that they've gone against, kept the name, but gone against that concept. Because the magic that we all enjoy would have been just, it wouldn't have happened, would it, if it was winner stays on all the time?
Well, it would have definitely been different. It's hard to imagine, though, that you get the same kind of stories, especially if a team that was winner stays on managed to win it every time they got chanced for quite a long period of time. It would have made it a bit stale. Yeah. So I think it's best how it is, and it does deliver excitement throughout, from August all the way through to May.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that we've loved having you on throughout the years, Phil, is that we learn about stats that I call them pub facts, that you can astound people with when you're out and about, whether in a pub, whether you're at family parties or whatever. But the other thing that we love on the Non-League Football Show is learning about the people involved in football. And forever now, whenever I hear mention of goal scorers, particularly goal scorers in the FA Cup, I'm forever now going to feel sorry for Wilfried Billy Minter, who scored 7 goals for St Albans City against Dulwich Hamlet in the 22-23 fourth qualifying round, and he was still on the losing side.
I know, what a record, eh? To score 7 times and not actually win the game. But I suppose he got 2 match balls, I would have hoped, for that kind of...
So he played the next game on his own, yeah.
but every season you get new things happen and new records set and new records broken and it continues on, which is fabulous for someone like me to keep reporting what's going on and how it changes year on year.
Yeah, and you mentioned that it's not just for FA Cup fans. It's not all about FA Cup specific facts either. There's a section in there. Hopefully I'm not giving too much away here because there's so much in this book. Don't worry, it'll keep you busy. In the team name initials and abbreviations explained section, I learned about potential old rivals of my club, Hazen Yeardon United. Now, I now know that there were 2 pre-war appearances in the extra preliminary round of Hayes Co Sports, which is a work cider from Hayes Cocoa Company. We're later known locally to us as Nestles, but I guess for those of a linguistic bent, it's probably Nestle. But this is a side that I never knew existed, but I do now.
Well, hopefully there's a whole load more in there as well that didn't know existed because they're long gone. But with over 3,250 clubs that have competed in the FA Cup over the years, it's no surprise as many of them are not in the memory banks of us that follow the top teams or follow lower level teams throughout the game at the moment.
Yeah. So please complete the sales pitch for us then, Phil. How can people get hold of a copy?
Okay, well, FA Cup 150 can be purchased directly from my website, facupfatfile.co.uk/shop. And that is set up for PayPal users. If you don't want to use PayPal, there's a link on there to Amazon where you can use conventional methods of purchase to buy the book on Amazon, or just get in touch with me on Twitter and we can have a conversation about how I can get one to you.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to let you go just yet, though, Phil, because, of course, the reason you've written the book is to celebrate the 150th competition of the greatest football cup competition in the world. The competition's even got a new logo as well. But we've missed the first 2 rounds, everybody's been reading your blog. So can you give us some headline figures? I mean, for starters, how many clubs in this year's competition?
Yeah, there were 729 clubs. Obviously, the FA have undergone their restructure of the non-league pyramid, and I think the ultimate aim is to just have clubs all the way down to level 9, step 5. But I think a little bit of transition allowed 8 step 6 clubs in. It's a bit fewer than previous seasons, which is a bit disappointing. I think they could open it to more, but we shall see how they work that as they get more settled into their structure. But still, 729 clubs is still a high number of teams that can enjoy the ride of the FA Cup.
Yeah, and you mentioned that pyramid reshuffle. It had an impact on a little bit of magic as well, I would think. But you mentioned there that the step 6 sides, we're always excited by the lowest ranked club. Anybody we should be keeping an eye on there?
Well, unfortunately, all those step 6 sides have been eliminated.
See, that's the magic. That's what we say. They've taken a little gloss of it.
Well, yeah, but at the end of the day, there's many that are step 5 that would have been classed as step 6 last season. Mm-hmm. So it's just semantics at the end of the day. There's still small clubs that are often batting above their weight and giving a good go of trying to get a good run into the competition. You know, there are several clubs into the first qualifying round for the first time. So, you know, it's still, I guess, memories to be made for those clubs. Mm. And there will be more as we go on.
Yeah, goal scorers this term again getting special recognition from the FA too. Any particular notable goal tallies that we've missed as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, it's brilliant that the FA are now recognising the contributions of players and clubs in the qualifying rounds as part of the overall award schemes. It's something I've been petitioning and been championing ever since I started the FA Cup Fat File blog. So it's good to see it happening, and the FA Golden Ball will go to the player who scores the most goals. in the overall competition. We've already had, I think, 26 hat tricks. Several players scored 4 goals in the extra premier round. And then we've had, I think for March United, Adam Boys, he netted 5 times in their 7-0 win in the preliminary round. So several players have already got their names in with a shout for trying to get that trophy.
And you also mentioned that the next round's next weekend, and we'll speak to you again next week for some previews on that. But the Step 3 clubs are entering the competition. As frustratingly, it was another draw but behind closed doors this week, which obviously leads to many conspiracy theories, rightly or wrongly. One of the things that was put to me this week was that the balance of Step 3 sides drawn at home over those drawn away, and whether, you know, behind closed doors meant that, you know, there may be a little bit of skew in there. Can you set some minds at rest on that one, Phil?
Well, there are 87 clubs from Step 3 who are entering the competition in the first qualifying round. And their home and away split is that there are 42 of them drawn at home and 45 drawn away. So if there is a bias there, it's quite marginal. I don't think there's anything behind any favouritism or otherwise to those clubs.
And having worked for years as an investigative journalist, conspiracy theories come across my desk on a daily basis, and you just have to bat them away with stats. And you know, I need you almost like a we need FA Cup fuck file as an app on my watch, and I could just bat people away that come at me with a.
Well, there is one stat in that there are just 19 of the 121 ties that involve clubs that will be meeting each other in league action this season. And all 19 are all Step 3 ties. So maybe there's something there that somehow they've managed to avoid teams below from playing each other from the same division and focus just purely on those at Step 3 level.
I can hear the social media chatter already now. This is a plan by the FA just to see that to test the strength of the Step 3 divisions against each other and see that all the leagues are at the same state. Yeah, I can see it. Maybe. Maybe. Now, I mentioned we're going to have you back again next week in full stat mode, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more that you could tell us. But again, before I let you go, remind everybody where they can keep abreast of your work and, of course, get hold of a copy of your book.
Well, I obviously am tweeting, using my handle at FA Cup Fact File. You can use that to get a link through to my book on my website, facupfactfile.co.uk/shop. And I also run a blog on WordPress, facupfactfile.com.
Phil, as ever, always a pleasure to get you back on the Non-League Football Show. Even more the better, being our first show back after a little holiday. We've missed you. Thank you for joining us. Take care.
It's always a pleasure, Tim. Look forward to the next time.
So, where to next? There is, of course, only one place to head. Whilst I've been re-oiling the wheels and the dials of the non-league show setup, some in the non-league world have been, well, working through. Week in, week out, non-league from front page to back page, and we thank them for it. Indeed, I thank our next guest personally as I welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, editor-at-large of the non-league paper, Mr. Matt Badcock.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Now, I was expecting you to sound tired and weary, but the new season's upon us and you've just flown headlong into it.
I'm rejuvenated by the kickoff, and now the non-league show's about the season's really... Actually, the one thing I don't know is what year this season is. I'm getting so muddled of talking about 2021, 2019, 20, all these kind of different... PPGs and things that we've been talking about over the last 18 months. I can't actually remember what season we're in now, but I think it's 21-22, isn't it?
Yeah, I had a similar issue actually earlier, looking at a drop-down box for what season I was supposed to be looking at. And it is one of those where I had to probably stop and think and worry what year I was in. Worrying what day I was at and what hour. Matt, there's so much to catch up on. I think actually the last time I spoke with David Richardson, the announcement of Jack Pearce as the National League chairman was still imminent, which probably seemed a lifetime ago for you guys. And since then, the world of non-league is trotted along, isn't it? We've had some pre-season blips with COVID cancellations, but with proposals in place if there is a season curtailment, it looks as though football is back.
I think that's a thing, isn't it? You can tell football is back. Everyone's playing, and it's kind of quite nice, really. It's kind of almost, dare you say it, normal. I mean, sort of, as you say, there's been a few sort of COVID call-offs and a couple of issues the first weekend of the National League season with step one and two of games being sort of called off. But yeah, it's sort of whispering. It does all feel quite normal, and everyone's sort of just, I think, enjoying kind of getting on with games again and not having all the other stuff that we've been kind of talking about and worrying about over the last 18 months and just kind of getting on with it and enjoying watching goals going. I know I've sort of been out to a couple of games in the last couple of midweeks, and it's just been nice just to sort of turn up at a ground, watch a game and go home and kind of, you know, get back to that kind of reason why we love it in the first place, really, I guess.
And it's probably going to sound very, very weird, this, but I've actually quite enjoyed people watching as well, because I think that's one of the wonders of the non-league world is the variety of people that come along. And we've not seen people in stadiums, and it's just nice. You see people smiling, you know, even the ones wearing their masks, you can still see that they're enjoying their afternoon out.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? I mean, we were kind of lucky to be able to still go to some of the games that were behind closed doors, and there's always this kind of sort of strange feeling of guilt kind of being there watching games that people couldn't watch, fans couldn't watch, but also the fact that a lot of clubs, or the majority of clubs in non-league, weren't able to play, but they were pretty soulless kind of experiences, empty kind of experiences watching those games behind closed doors. And we saw sort of towards the end of the National League season where fans got back in, and then with the playoff promotion final, Hartlepool and Torquay, and so it was sort of about this noise again, and it's sort of amazing. But even going down to kind of been down to a Step 5 game and a FA Cup replay the other night, and it's just, yeah, it's just nice just to have that sort of hubbub and noise and people there just enjoying and kind of, you know, getting back to what we've all missed. And I think that's the big part about it, isn't it? It is that interaction, that supporters being in the ground, everyone kind of being able to stand in their positions where they like to stand, and just watching a really good game of football more often than not.
I've even had conversations with referees that are enjoying the banter from the fans. I mean, that's going to last probably 2 weeks at max, I would have thought. But it is something that we enjoy at non-league level, as much as crowds higher up might abuse a referee or tell them exactly what they think of them. At non-league level, you can make a difference with a referee.
Yeah, I was at a game on Tuesday, and the assistant referee was he was quite enjoying interacting with the crowd and the players, and it was kind of, yeah, it was nice to kind of have those problems again in a way of sort of decisions that people don't agree with, or, you know, him kind of sort of telling someone to just worry about standing there watching the game, and he'd sort of work out who was on and offside and all that. And it was, yeah, I mean, obviously we don't want it crossing the line, but even if the officials are enjoying themselves and enjoying that side of it, I think it's sort of a similar thing that a lot of managers kind of said they sort of missed getting a bit of stick from the crowd. And as long as it's done in the right way, then you know, so that's, I'd say, all part of the fun, really.
Now last weekend, start of the National League, I think, yeah, was it 117 match reports in last week's paper? I didn't count them. I rely on your colleague David Richardson to provide me with such facts and stats, you know. I leave that to other people. But you also had the Step 5 and Step 6 league roundups. I mean, at one point we were worried that the pandemic may decimate the world we live in, but it appears that non-league resilience that we talk about, you know, that means a player can go on to higher levels. It's strong on and off the field.
Yeah, I think David counted up 117 reports last week. I think it'll actually be more this week because we've got a bit more with everyone at Step 4 kind of playing, and Step 5, I think it'll be sort of around sort of 150 normally. So, yeah, somehow it all gets in there. But yeah, it's nice having all those kind of stories to tell of matches, and you know, think about some of the players you've kind of missed over this last 18 months. So some of them only played sort of 5 or 6 weeks really of competitive football, and then kind of how sort of disappointing that must be for, you know, those young players who've been trying to move on in their careers and move up. And as you know, all the success stories are kind of there to see, and even for those sort of players who are coming onto or on the back nine of their career and sort of trying to finish out their days, don't want to sort of go out of the way. You know, obviously some have retired and stopped, and but you know, they want to be back in front of fans and having that last kind of last crack at it in front of full crowds again. So yeah, it's sort of amazing really how well non-league has come through this pandemic. I mean, I know the pandemic's still going on, and you know, it's likely to be, I think we all sort of accept there could be sort of challenges and bumps along the road this season, but I think it has shown, say, when it all first started back in March 2020, you have a real fear for kind of what would happen across the board, across the whole game, and you know, we've come kind of through it relatively unscathed. I know there have been sort of clubs and fans, you know, have gone sort of to the wall or resigned from leagues or dropped down, so there have been some, you know, there have been casualties, but you know, overall it's kind of shown the sort of resilience of non-league, and you look around some of the spending that's going on as well, and you kind of wonder whether there's been a pandemic or not, to be honest.
I spoke with an earlier guest about, you know, maybe non-league has come through and you know, slightly more organised and planning ahead with better strategy, and then as you say, there seems to be a worrying trend towards maybe duplicating some of the mistakes that the Premier League have made down at non-league level, and hopefully you know, that'll be nipped in the bud, because we want our non-league clubs here for many more years to come.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think maybe this is kind of for some clubs and players and throughout the game, it's maybe been a bit of a reality check on and getting back to basics, I guess, really. And yeah, I mean, there's definitely things that need to be learnt from the pandemic, and I think sort of through the sort of the early part of it, there was talks about, you know, this is time to learn lessons and all this kind of thing. And you know, I think time will tell on how much of that is sort of come to fruition, I guess.
I think that, you know, the big lesson we've learned is that we missed it. We missed football. We're looking forward to a bumper bank holiday weekend. Well, I am. I don't know. What about non-league paper towels? That sounds like a very, very hectic weekend. What can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, I just want to get through Saturday first of all. Well, that's sort of my main goal. It's kind of been it's been strange the last sort of few weeks. It's like, oh yeah, this is what it's like on a Saturday night in the office. This is actually quite stressful. And we sort of got used to not having all these games and all these sort of issues that sort of crop up generally through the evening that you get so used to. So we're still sort of trying to get back into that. I think I'll be pleased to get another few weeks out of the way, so when we're kind of sort of all back in our stride. But yeah, plenty going on this week, and like you say, just having football back is just is the main focus. So we've got lots of big games in the National League. We've got Southend, Stockport County, Wrexham are going down to Eastleigh, and some interesting ties off, some interesting opening weekend results as well. So lots of action from across the pyramid. We said more than 100 reports in there. FA Cup draw reaction. We've got Phil Netz doing his famous FA Cup stats for us. So looking forward to that. And we've got a piece with the Darlington Town's record scorer. He scored 7 goals, I think it was, in the game last week. And we've caught up with him. And it's quite an interesting sort of story behind how he's come to break the record and a bit of motivational advice he got before the game from the chairman. So plenty in there, lots going on. And you say, nice to have that paper back, all those results in there, all those tables, and pouring over the bank holiday fixtures, which fortunately we get a little bit of a breather. So maybe try and get out somewhere and enjoy a game again, hopefully in the sun.
Yeah, hopefully in the sun. And you know, pick up your non-league paper on a Sunday morning, go down, sit in a park, read the non-league paper, make sure you hold it up high so that other people can see it and they might want to go and buy it as well. Matt Badcock, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Tim. Good to have you back.
And that's it for this week. Thank you to all of my guests and for everybody for listening and coming back to us. or wherever they may be. And if you do manage to get away and get to listen to the show in an obscure location, or even if it's just on an away terrace somewhere waiting for a game to begin, please do let us know. Take a snap, send it to us. We'll share it on social media. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you, and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.